Hi, I'm James, editor of Adventure Bike Rider, here with another episode of the ABR Garage. Now, I'm joined in the studio today by Ollie Rook, staff writer of ABR Magazine, for a special edition of the podcast dedicated to one bike in particular, the Harley-Davidson Pan America. Now, after years of teasing, snippets of information, a delayed launch, and plenty of excitement, Harley-Davidson has revealed the full details about its first adventure bike, the Pan America 1250. And boy, it's divided opinion. Ollie, you head up the social media channels for Adventure Bike Rider magazine. There's been lots of Facebook posts. We've done lots of website stories on it. What's the response been?
It's been a little bit like Marmite. People have either really quite liked it or really strongly hated it. It's been a bit of a strange one. I think in the run-up to it particularly, there was a lot of talk about the looks because they're obviously quite divisive, but also people kind of guessing that it would be quite heavy. And then when the bike actually came out and the stats were out, people focused a lot more on the looks because actually it turned out to be not as heavy as it was expected to be. So yeah, I think it's divided opinion. I think there's, despite the fact that there's quite a lot of chatter from people who are maybe not the biggest fans of it, actually it's got a ton of clicks and there are a lot of people really interested to read about it, which to me says that Harley may be on to a bit of a winner there.
Yeah, like for me, I've worked at ABR a few years now and I haven't seen a bike generate so much interest than the Pan America from the very first shots that we put up online a couple of years ago. No, I get it. It's different. Now, for me, different is it's exciting. I'm excited about riding the bike and checking it out and seeing what Harley can do. But I also do understand why there is some skepticism because, well, Harley doesn't have a background in adventure riding. It's late to the party. You know, there's no denying it. Adventure bikes have been popular for a long time now. So it isn't that history. There isn't that heritage. And Harley's a company for its strengths. It is very much known for its big, heavy cruisers. Not particularly technologically advanced, and probably fair to say. So to come on the scene with a Pan America, you know, I think people were almost, well, nervous about what might be coming, but actually it's looking pretty good, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think that's true, although I would say that if you think about the history of motorcycling, and particularly since the Second World War, has there been a bike manufacturer that's been more tied in with that idea of just getting on a bike, slinging a bit of luggage on the back of it and going on a tour? I think Harley has really, really always marketed itself as that kind of freedom seeking machine, and the big tourers have always been synonymous with touring. Obviously, adventure bikes and adventure touring is a very big thing now, but I don't think it's the largest step to imagine that they would see the growth of adventure touring and think, oh, we could have a part of that, because they've been so reliant almost on big road tourers beforehand.
Yeah, I guess, you know, you flick through Facebook or Instagram in particular, and you'll see a lot of images there of people in the States, especially. I think where Harley probably sells a lot more bikes than it does here in the UK. Just off on, I don't know, epic road trips on you know, arrow straight roads through the desert on their Harleys with some, you know, luggage kind of strapped to the back, or one of the big cruisers. And for me, who, you know, I am a self-confessed USA lover. I love the country and love every time I go and visit out there. There's that kind of romance to riding a Harley on a road trip. Yep. But personally, I'm looking forward to replicating over here on an adventure bike. So in this episode of The Garage, we'll be delving deep into the information we have about the Pan America. Now, just to throw it out there, we haven't ridden it yet. I don't think any media or any motorbike journalists have actually had the chance to ride the bike yet. But Harley has released a fair amount of information, an online launch towards the end of February. So we'll be taking a look at the power and the weight and the extras and the technology that seems to be dripping from the bike. When the bike does have a press launch, we'll be riding it and there'll be a full review in Adventure Bike Rider magazine. And to read the mag, just head over to www.adventurebikerider.com/shop and you can pick up a copy of ABR, or alternatively, subscribe to the ABR digital library and you can get access to every single issue of Adventure Bike Rider magazine ever published. So that's 10 years of knowledge, inspiration, and adventure bike and excitement on your phone, your tablet, and your computer. Just head over to the ABR website. But let's take a look at the Pan America. Yeah. So first of all, more than anything, I think we should talk about the looks. It's because, you know, it's not Harley haven't played it safe, have they? They haven't come out with a I don't know, a GS clone or a Multistrada clone with a beak and tried to just kind of, you know, fit in with the rest of the crowd. It's striking. It looks like a bit of a tank. I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but what were your first impressions when you saw it?
I think the first thing that I thought when I saw it, and obviously we've been teased with these images, but to see it actually as it will be sold in the showrooms is they've done it their way. And I, first things first, I have a lot of respect for them for not trying to copy other bikes that are on the market. I think that's really important, particularly with a brand like Harley-Davidson, to say, we're doing this our way. We're going to make a venture bike that doesn't, you know, doesn't have like the beak. It doesn't look like a GS clone or like it's trying to copy a KTM or something like that. It looks like a Harley. And I know that's a strange thing to say when it's they haven't done an adventure bike before.
Because it doesn't look like any other Harley, but it does. That headlight, that kind of square headlight is, or rectangular headlight, sort of reminds me of the, it's the Fat Bob. Is it the Fat Bob,
yep,
isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And it just sort of, yeah, there's something very Harley-esque about this bike that looks different to anything else in their lineup.
Yeah.
I'm not quite sure why.
Yeah, it's just, it's big, it's brash, it's very American. It almost looks like a big fist that's coming to just punch through
the air.
It's
going to conquer the terrain rather than glide over it, isn't it?
Yeah, and yeah. I personally quite like that. I think I completely get where people are coming from, and you may think the same back at home, that it's not the prettiest bike, but I wouldn't call any bike really ugly. I think it's just quite
well. There might be one or two out there.
maybe. But I think what's telling is that the front, particularly from, there aren't too many press photos that are directly from the front, and I think there's a reason for that. Is it is very distinctive looking from the front. It really does look like quite like a slab, but from the side it looks great. From that sort of front side angle, it also looks very good. So yeah, I personally, I'm a fan. I wouldn't mind being seen riding it around. I think it's going to be a head turner.
Yeah.
And I just like the fact that it's individual and it's different. People are going to know that you're riding a Harley. There's no two ways about it.
It's kind of as well. It's very, I don't know, it's what's the word? It just looks like it's fit for purpose. Mm. Like, you know, you
utilitarian,
look at
the, almost.
Yeah, you look at the Ducati Multistrada V4 that we were riding the other week, and that is a beautiful bike. You know, I don't think there's any get away from it. It's just beautiful, and everything flows. Whereas the Harley, it looks a little bit like a Tonka toy in a way, but that's no bad thing. It's got that big brash headlight. It's got that huge screen that just looks like it's going to provide so much weather protection. It's unbelievable. Yeah. And it just looks, you know, it reminds me, if the Multistrada is a Ferrari, then the Pan America seems to be more like a Jeep. You know, it's kind of a 4x4 or something like that, but with two wheels. Yeah. So anyway, moving on. So I think kind of when it comes to looks, personally, I think they've done the right thing. If they put their stamp, they're trying to put their stamp on the adventure bike market, and they're saying, this is Harley, we're a bit different, and come and check us out.
Yep, 100%.
But when it comes to specs and the weight and whatnot, they haven't done anything too different, have they?
Yeah.
And I've had a few conversations with some of the Harley guys here in the UK, and it's pretty clear that they're trying to take a chunk out of the BMW GS market. So the big R1250 GS, it sells something like half the adventure bikes in Europe.
Yeah,
you know, it's all conquering,
it's the king.
Whether you love it or hate it, personally I love the GS. I think it's an outstanding bike. It sells. Yeah. It shifts. And so, you know, any manufacturer coming to the game is going to be looking at a GS thinking, oh, how do we take some of those sales? So so first of all, you know, looking at the different models of Pan America, there's two, isn't there?
Yeah.
A little bit like you've got your standard GS and then you've got the GSTE that everybody wants. So one of GS want. Harley have done something similar, and they've given us a standard model and a highly specs one.
Which is called the Special.
Called the Special.
Very simply named.
What's that? What's that all about?
So you have the standard model, actually, although it's the base spec, there's a lot of tech in there, and there's a lot of features in there to make it. It's not really a compromise. It's a very good bike in its own right, but the Special just has that little bit more. It has, you know, it's ready for touring. It's got a center stand, it's got the bash plate, it's got the engine guards, and it has a few more bits of tech added on as well.
It's got
and
two then, extra riding modes, isn't it?
Yeah.
Fully adjustable riding modes on top of the five.
Yeah, which comes standard, which is a lot to come with a standard bike.
And we'll delve into that a bit later, but it's kind of added an extra, you know, an extra little premium sheen onto the bike, hasn't it?
Yeah.
And for, well, I think like the GS, you can probably up the extras and pay a lot more money. But looking at the prices I have here, the standard bike sells from 14,000.
Yep.
And I'll stress from, because you're probably going to be adding some extras onto there. And the special, 15.5.
Yeah.
Which, you know, isn't a huge leap.
Yeah, so those prices, I think, are for this kind of most basic colourway as well. So it's an extra £250 on to get a bit more of an exciting colour scheme. And then in terms of extras, I know that the both models come with cast aluminium wheels. Spoked wheels are extra on both, so they're an optional extra. And then there's obviously the adaptive ride height, which is a real kind of exciting bit of technology that is only available on the special, and that's a £600 optional extra.
See,
well,
I was going to look at that later in kind of our technology
section.
But to be honest with you, it's something, it's a first on, certainly a first on adventure bikes. I think it's a first on motorcycles that I know of anyway, but please do correct me if I'm wrong. I just think it's, if it works, it's a stroke of genius because the one gripe we hear, and the one gripe I have as a 6 foot tall guy, is that adventure bikes can be a bit tall to ride. It's tough to get your feet down. You know, for people who are shorter, it can be a bit intimidating for newer riders. So Harley have they solved the problem?
Yeah, I think, I mean, you know, there will be purists who will say that it's more technology, and what if it goes wrong when you're out in the bush? What if it goes wrong when you're on your tour? And I think it could be a valid question, but absolutely. I mean, we're both 6 foot, and even some of the larger adventure bikes can be a bit of an intimidating one, and that's, we're above average height.
So just to rewind there, so this adjustable, just to explain exactly what it is, it's what's the correct name for it?
It's adaptive ride height.
Ride height, and it, so you'll get to the traffic lights
and it lowers.
It lowers.
So I think it lowers to about 850 mil or 840 mil ride height when it's lowered, when you're stopped, and then it rises up to 890 mil seat height when you're on the go. There are a couple of settings. There's one that as soon as you start to slow down, it begins to bring the bike down. Yeah. And there's one that only brings the bike down when you're fully at a stop, I believe. And I guess it does it a bit quicker, just so that...
So I can imagine that's a bit of an awkward lean as it's going down and you're leaning your foot down.
But yeah, I mean, it's... And this is the thing, I think, rather than trying to reinvent the wheel, and rather than putting out a super heavy adventure bike, they've gone very middle of the road for a lot of the stats that we'll look at a bit later. But there's a bit of a sprinkling of ingenuity in there with things like the adaptive ride height that actually is quite exciting. And if there was another manufacturer, say Ducati or BMW, who's doing that, I think that a lot of people would be very impressed with it. I think because it's Harley, there may be a few raised eyebrows, but actually I think it's really cool and I think it's going to catch on.
Yeah, and we've seen kind of this year seems to have been the year of the radar control, cruise control. There's a couple of bikes that we've seen, particularly the Multistrada V4.
Yep.
But actually, in terms of everyday use, this adaptive ride height technology, for me, I just can't... I don't know why I didn't come up with it before. I didn't I have this idea, because I remember buying the first generation Honda Africa Twin Adventure Sports. Cracking bike, really tall. Thank God they've lowered it for the 2020 model, didn't they? But I just remember every time I came to a traffic light, you know, as I'm sure plenty of you guys do, if you ride taller bikes, is you just have to slide your arse sideways off it, don't you? As you slow down, the arse is sideways, you end up kind of halfway off the bike. So I just think it's a really clever thing. And, you know, if you've got, you know, a lot of shorter riders probably are put off by adventure bikes. So it kind of opens an adventure bike up to people that may not have thought about buying them before.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think it's a really cool.
All right. So that's a hit for Harley on something that's
one
a bit
nil.
Different. Yeah, 1-0. No, no one's playing against Harley here. But no, I think it's great. So looking at the power, I've got some stats here. So we've got a 1,252 cc engine. It's actually called the Pan America 1250, yep. isn't it? Which is quite similar to the GSR 1250 yep. GS. 150 brake horsepower, mm-hmm. which is, again, it's biggest rival. The GS is 136 brake horsepower. And you've got 128 newton meters of torque. So that all adds up to basically all the power you'd need in a big adventure touring bike, isn't it?
Yeah, I think once again, it's they haven't tried to reinvent the wheel. It's just, if you looked at those stats and you didn't see Harley Pan America and you just looked at those stats in isolation, you'd think, oh, this is just your average GS, not multi-strada, because that's obviously a lot more powerful. But you would think that it's something that's come from BMW or KTM or potentially even Triumph. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of power there. Plenty to shift the bike along. And I think, there's no surprises. There's nothing that's particularly alarming in there for would-be buyers. It all so far looks pretty promising.
Yeah, when you look at the weights here, I've got the standard is 245 kilograms, specials 258 kilograms. The seat height you mentioned, 890 millimeters, which is actually relatively tall.
Yeah.
And you know, if you don't have the adaptive ride height, you've got to saddle up on that. It's just all striking me as a big adventure tourer to, you know, here in the UK, jump on a ferry, hit the toll roads in France, get to the Alps, have a lot of fun on the twisties.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those, it's a long distance adventure bike. And they seem to be aiming for that long distance tourer. Not you're around the world rider, but someone who, you know, like myself, has got a week off work and will blast down to the Alps or the Pyrenees just to go and have some fun and get into the mountains.
I think there's probably a lot of people. I think this is always the thing that we think about the British and the European adventure bike market, is that it isn't the case that a lot of us buy a big adventure bike and then just hammer green lanes and go off piste all of the time on it, because it's not really possible in Britain. A lot of our riding is on the road, and Harley are clearly very conscious of that, and it's what makes the R1250 GS such a good big seller. And Harley have thought, we're not going to try and create something that's going to be an absolute hero off-road. We're just going to get something that I'm sure it's very good off-road. And again, we'll talk about the stats that back that up.
Well, looking at some of the marketing shots.
Well, they're quick to emphasize.
The videos. Yeah. They've really pushed the off-road prowess of this bike. But boy, does it look big and heavy to be doing those jumps. Like, I think those riders are pretty experienced pros who are doing those jumps on a big, heavy bike like that. And as with any adventure bike, you know, I think, likes of the GS, likes of the KTM 1290 Super Adventure, they're really capable off-road.
Absolutely.
But you've got to be a capable rider as well.
Yeah, you have to be confident, but it's kind of the limit. Our limit, and I'm happy to say this, my limit will stop way before I reach the limit of one of those big adventure bikes off-road. And that's the fact. But on the road, absolutely brilliant. And yeah, I think those stats, there's again, nothing too scary in there. It'll be interesting to see, obviously, stuff like the centre of gravity, because I think the beauty of the GS is that 200, I think it weighs about 248 kilograms, while road ready.
That boxer engine just loads keeps the weight. Those so cylinders so low, isn't it?
And it's another thing I noticed when riding the Africa Twin is it's a heavy bike, but when you get moving, that low centre of gravity just keeps it so planted, so stable. And I think the early multi-stradas was one of the things that you and Bryn have both ridden them. And you said that the centre of gravity is quite high, and you notice that a lot more. So if Harley are conscious of that and can bring that weight low down on the bike as well, I think that will make all the difference. Again, that's one of those things that unfortunately we won't be able to tell on paper. We'll have to see for ourselves when we get to have a ride of the bike.
Yeah, and it seems to me that, you know, we've got this new adventure bike from Harley. It's causing lots of excitement, plenty of skepticism as well. It looks different. It's got the adaptive ride height, which is different. But actually, it's slotting very well into that big capacity adventure bike market. And it's looking, you know, it looks at home there. You know, you're looking at those power stats. We've got Fuel capacity of 21.2 litres, which is about right for the class. Yep. Harley reckons it'll get about 200 miles or so range at 51 miles per gallon. It's got a 19-inch front wheel and a 17-inch rear, similar to the GS's 19-inch front, so it's kind of a nod to off-road riding, but they haven't gone for the big 21 up front, you know, to really embrace that.
Yep.
Suspension travel, 190mm suspension, front and rear.
Basically the same as the GS. I think the GS has 200 at the rear, but 190 yeah, at the front.
Yeah, like more than adequate, I think, for what 99% of people will do. Probably actually more than 99% of riders will need it. Yeah. Brakes, dual 320mm Brembos up front. You know, that's going to provide plenty of stopping power.
Yep.
It's got everything just to slot into that. Yeah. That big capacity market and stand alongside the Ducatis, the KTMs, the BMWs, the Triumphs, and be a real, well, you know, a real option for people perhaps looking for something different.
Yeah.
So when it comes to technology, Harley hasn't scraped, has it? It's packed here. So even like, you know, two models of bike, the standard and the special, both of them have got plenty of technology.
Yeah.
Just to reel off some of the stuff, it's got a 6.8 inch TFT screen, which I guess is pretty standard for a premium price bike these days.
Yeah, I think what's quite cool about that is they said it's tiltable, so that cool. You can have it that, well, kind of easy to view while you're riding along sat down, but also when you go off-road, and if you go off-road, you can tilt it so you can also view the TFT when you're stood up.
Moves around.
And
yeah.
I think that's pretty cool.
And that's kind of cool in the even on the motorway, you know, if you're a long motorway journey and the sun's behind you and you're having trouble seeing speedo, sometimes it happens these days. TFTs are getting better though. Yeah, just give it a tilt, job done. Yeah, so yeah, TFT screen, it's got an inertial measurement unit, an IMU, and so we've got lean angle sensitive ABS, cornering traction control, cornering links braking, cruise control, five rider modes. It's packed full of goodies. And then if you go pay the extra for the special edition, you've got two extra adjustable riding modes, as we mentioned, a tire pressure and monitoring system, which actually I'm a big fan of. I think they're great. I wish they were on every bike. Heated grips and the adaptive ride height. This isn't the old school Harley cruiser of a slab of metal going down the road with a lot of noise we used to know, isn't it?
Yeah, there's a lot. And I think the most impressive about all of that, and if you're sat at home and you've just heard all of that lift being reeled off, is that that's all is standard. The first stuff that you said up until the extra two ride modes, heat grips and stuff like that, everything before that is standard. On a 14,000 or £14,250 bike, depending on which colour scheme you go for, that's pretty impressive.
It is, although I think I'd like, if I'm paying that amount of money, I think I'd want to see those things.
Cruise control, I think, should be standard on every adventure bike, personally, apart from maybe the very base spec, because it's quite an important thing when you're covering big distances on the tarmac or on the motorway, which a lot of us expect to do on our adventure bikes.
We've spoken about this, haven't we, in a previous pod? And I have to admit, I admitted to the world, I just don't ever use cruise control, so I'm not bothered. But I kind of, if I'm paying a lot of money for a bike, I want it to be there, you know. And this
like
is
to have the option.
Yeah, and this is a bike. This isn't a bike for your purists who want something simple just to disappear off around the world, and if it breaks down in the middle of a desert somewhere, they can fix it. I'm sure the Pan America will be used to go around the world at some point. But you know, this is a premium bike. It's got plenty of luxuries, and it's for people that, you know, want to get value for their money if they're spending that amount of cash. But
I think it offers that. I really do. I think that's a really impressive rap sheet.
Yeah, and I don't know off the top of my head, but if you're looking at other bikes, if you're adding those extras, I'm pretty certain that the price will go up and up and up and up. You know, if you do want to get a GS with all the bells and whistles, you're looking at close to £20,000, aren't you? Great bike, many would argue worth the money. Probably I would too.
Yeah.
But you know, to have all these things, you know, coming with that standard bike, I think is it's a very smart move by Harley.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see because, as we've said, it's not really Harley's MO to create a teched up bike. So it'd be very interesting to see how it works, how intuitive the interface is for riders to use while riding along. Just the actual, because tech is all well and good, but some of this stuff needs to be controlled in the saddle. Some of it can be easy to turn on and off, some of it can't. It's, I think it's very important, and again, it's one of those things that our bike tester will check over when it comes to the full review and the full in the saddle review. But it'll be very interesting to hear just how that tech is in practice, because on paper it sounds fantastic. In practice, tech can be a little different sometimes.
It's got to be integrated, hasn't it? Exactly. It's got to be integrated well. You know, a little bit like, use the iPhone analogy again, and they might not be the most sophisticated and the best phones out there, but everything works seamlessly. And I know that's something that you spoke about, the Africa Twin, which if you've watched the ABR Garage before, you know that Ollie has a little bit of a love affair with the Africa Twin of Adventure Sports. And I have to admit, when I got in it for the first time, the most recent model last year, I saw all those buttons on the left bar, which just, for God's sake, it looked like there were about 50 buttons there.
Yeah, like a calculator.
It pretty much ignored them all and just went riding. But I know that you're a big fan of tech, and you're a big fan of your Apple CarPlay and integrating all this stuff. So to see, you know, to see a bike with all these goodies, it must be exciting for someone who loves that sort of thing.
This is the thing, but I think I'm a fan of tech when it's done right. And in my opinion, on the Honda Africa Twin, despite that it is a cluttered switchgear, but it is done right and it's very easy to navigate around. I think I mentioned this in to you recently in the office, that at the moment I'm riding the Triumph 850 Sport. The Triumph Tiger 850 Sport.
Lovely little bike.
It's a lovely bike, and there's not a lot of tech on it. And I think I said to you, it has a perfect tech to bike ratio, because the way it's integrated, it's very, very low key. Personally, after a year riding the Rally Pro, I felt that there was a lot of tech on that bike.
It was a Tiger 900 Rally Pro.
Yep. So the kind of specced up variant, there was a lot of tech on that bike, but it just didn't feel as intuitive. It didn't feel as nice to use. And it ended up being a bit of a distraction, and I didn't like it. So I think that's, for me, that's a very important part of how technology is integrated. It's not just the fact that it's there, it's that it's easy to use, that the TFT is nicely laid out, that it's easy to switch around with your left thumb. And again, all of that stuff is stuff that I'm sure Harley would have considered. But without that heritage of creating tech-top bikes for the last 10 years, maybe there'll be a few teething issues. Maybe it'll be a little rough around the edges. We'll just have to wait and see. And that's I'm looking forward to it.
I have to admit, I was kind of a little bit, I wouldn't say skeptical, but I was a little bit like that. I was thinking, you know, first generation of any bike, it's always kind of, you know, it's a little bit of dipping your toe into the unknown, isn't it? And for Harley Davidson to come out with something so radically different, you know, could they do it, could they not? And then a few months ago, I was lucky enough to have the Livewire Harley Davidson's electric bike on test. And I had it for about 3 weeks. And oh my God, that thing was incredible. Like, genuinely, if you ever get the chance to test ride a Livewire, do it, because it is brilliant. And Harley, in my book, absolutely nailed it.
Yep.
And I'm sure we're going to see electric bikes kind of, you know, progress and come on. And in 5 years' time, people might look back on the Livewire and think, oh, you know, it was a good first attempt. But actually, right here, right now, I would love that bike in my garage. Yep. It was just incredible. And it was just a seamless ride, as you said, you know, whether it was the recovery system trying to recover energy to give me a greater range, or it was just the TFT dash with the lights down the side, and then the lights were green when I had lots of battery, and it went yellow and then red, and it was a brilliant machine. And it just made me think, if Harley can nail something as complicated as coming out with what is the world's first production electric bike from a major manufacturer, I think, isn't it?
Yeah.
Although there's plenty out there from the likes of Zero and Jika and so forth. But if they can nail that, hell, I'll put money on them nailing an adventure bike. I really would.
Yeah absolutely. I'm really excited to see it. And this is the thing about Harley is, you know, much like we're both fans of Formula One, Ferrari have fallen on tough times in Formula One. But that brand is, you know, it runs through motorsport, the history of motorsport. And Harley runs through the history of motorcycling. Mm. They haven't overnight become, they don't create awful bikes. They've run on a few tough times, and this is something new that they're trying, but you know that it's going to be pretty good, and they're going to throw the full might of all of those years of heritage and all of those years of experience in creating bikes that sell into creating something new. And I'm really excited to see how it is to ride.
I guess some might argue that they're struggling to sell a few at the moment, that's a whole different conversation.
Yeah.
But I have to admit, on that Livewire, there was something special about looking down and seeing the Harley Davidson badge.
Yeah.
It's just it's not a logical thing. It's just a feeling. You know, I get it when I ride a Ducati. I get it when I ride my own Triumph Bonneville, which is, you know, my bike in the garage. It's not an adventure bike, I know, but it's something different because I'm lucky enough to ride adventure bikes through work. And I just look down at that Triumph logo. I look down at the Harley Davidson logo, and it's just something special about it. I can't explain it particularly well, which isn't ideal for a podcast. Yeah. But you know, it's something premium. There's a history, there's a heritage there, and it's the starting point to making you feel special about riding a bike. Now, the bike's got to be good.
Yeah, of course.
But it's got that starting point.
I think that, similar, I've never owned a Harley. I've never, but my dad, and this is a very strong memory for me as someone who kind of became a biker, was that there was always this photo of my dad on a Tour Glide in, I think, the 80s.
Yeah.
Big Tour Glide. And when I was six, when I was seven, that was the coolest thing. Like, my dad was so cool because he rode a Harley Tour Glide. And for me, that was awesome. My dad rode a Harley Davidson. It's that brand that has that sort of appeal for the kid in all of us that is part of the reason that we all ride bikes. And I think the fact that they're coming out with a new adventure bike, which is obviously a very big bike market now, but you still have the badge, you still have that Harley engine. And I really hope that it's characterful, and I hope that there's a bit of thump and there's a bit of meat and the exhaust sounds a bit throaty. Because if you can get that a very like visceral feeling and that kind of emotion of riding a Harley and translate it into a bike that is also very practical and can cover those big distances and can go on green lanes and ride gravel trails, then I think they'll be on to a winner.
And that's it. I think that Harley character is something that I'll really be looking for. And it must be tough for the engineers and the designers, because they've been asked to create an adventure bike to rival the likes of you know, BMW and Triumph, and they are very slick machines. Although you know, starting up that boxer engine with the shake is pretty characterful as well.
That's the thing. It's
but I often hark back to I went to the launch of the Motor Guzzi V85 TT.
Yeah.
Which is the first adventure bike from Moto Guzzi since the Stelvio production was ended, and I admit I was looking for a little bit of character in that bike as well. And I turned it on outside the hotel when there was a line of about 20 V85 TTs there, lots of other journalists, and the thing just barked and shook into life, and I jumped, and I may have even let out a little yelp in my mind, because I'd just come off riding the Triumph Tiger 800 triple, which is just smooth as hell. Mm-hmm. And I was just overjoyed that the V85 TT had that Motor Guzzi character in it, and it enhanced the ride so much. You know, if you're not a fan of that slight type of character, some vibration, that sound, that rocking motion, you ain't gonna love it. But yeah, when I ride a Harley, I want to feel like I'm riding a Harley. I want a bit of that history and heritage. I don't want the bad points, but I want them to take a little bit of vibration, a little bit of rock, and put it into a modern, well-performing bike. And I think if they can manage to do that, they might capture some hearts and minds.
And that's the thing. It's just when you create a motorcycle, you want to capture people's hearts, because that's the reason that we ride bikes. If we were thinking with our heads, we'd probably be driving cars, because they're safer, they're probably more economical, but we don't. We ride bikes because we ride bikes because we love riding bikes. We love being on two wheels. And there's many different reasons behind that, but there's a reason that Harley was very successful for a long time. And if they can recapture that kind of childlike excitement, then they'll be on to a winner. I'm really looking forward to hearing Julian or whoever from the ABR team goes on the launch. I'm really looking forward to hearing their thoughts. Really looking forward to riding one myself at the Adventure Bike Rider Festival.
Yeah, and if they can nail the X Factor, and I hate using that word X Factor, but you know, and I always liken it to my experience in my commute. And I have a very short commute to work. It's literally a few miles, and I can walk it. You know, it doesn't take me long to walk. And sometimes I do when the weather's nice and I'm trying to be a bit fit and healthy. I have the option of a car, or I have the option of whichever bike I'm testing at the time. And whether a bike has got that X factor, that character, usually determines whether I ride, walk, or drive to work. And it's not a conscious thing, but some bikes I've got in the garage, I'll immediately, you know, get up, sort myself out, have a shower, grab my gear, grab my helmet, and just jump on the bike without thinking. Because even for just 4 or 5 miles, I want to feel that bike. I want to feel that enjoyment of motorcycling. Some of the bikes we have on test, very capable. I just don't.
Yeah.
I just, you know, I just jump in the car or I'll walk. I can't be bothered to put all my gear on or something like that. And so I'm hoping that Harley is going to be grab my helmet, grab my gear.
To ride it.
And just, I want to ride it to the short distance to work.
Yep.
Yeah. Fingers crossed. Come on, Harley. Fingers you can crossed. Do it. No, I think they have. But something that's important to me, and I know matters not a jot to you, is pillion comfort.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of in the stage in life now where I'm very lucky to be married to a wonderful woman who doesn't ride herself, but does enjoy motorcycle touring, so indulges in my passion. So every year we you know, load up with luggage, she jumps on the back, and we'll disappear off to Europe somewhere, whether it's in search of sun, mountains, or just a change of scene. So pillion comfort for me, and I imagine quite a few riders who are looking at the Pan America, will be important. And I was really pleased to see a big, chunky pillion seat that looked pretty well padded, chunky grab rails, and it looked like it was a nice two-up touring bike, didn't it?
It does, yeah. I think, again, it's not my area of expertise, but I think, yeah, it's got that power to be able to pull two people along and their luggage effortlessly. Yeah, a big seat, big grab rails. Hopefully when it's loaded up with luggage, the top box will have a nice padded seat rest. And it will just be another big tourer, perfect for you, your partner, and all of your kit to take away.
And that adjustable suspension, you know, so is it semi-adjustable? Semi-active. So, you know, kind of that's going to adjust for you when you when your pillion jumps on the back, so there's no none of that light end, which I've had when touring with my wife on the Bonneville. You just really didn't feel any traction
your
on
way
the front
through
end.
Italy.
Yeah, wheeling off the ferry. But yeah, it looks like it's going to be big comfort. And there is something, you know, I'm actually a big fan of the mid-size adventure bikes around at the moment. You know, the likes of the KTM 890 Adventure and whatnot. But I have to admit, when I'm loaded up with luggage and my wife's on the back, there's something just so handy about having all the power in the world just to cruise along, not having to plan your overtakes and knowing that you've got the torque, you've got the power, and you can just go anywhere and do anything. No hassle, it's relaxed.
Yeah. Just whether your partner agrees with you on the looks is another thing, I guess. But
Yeah. Bikes more and more as time goes on become joint decisions. I'm not quite sure how that happened. But anyway, you'll get there one day. You will. So we look through the various stats of the Pan America. You know, it's shaping up to be a really exciting bike. I think the fact that we're here dedicating a podcast to it shows how exciting it is and how kind of expectant the motorcycling world is to see it. I'm sure there's going to be plenty of people out there that want it to fail. And just
sadly,
as much,
yeah.
I think there's going to be a lot of people, I think like us, who want it to be a great bike and want to see Harley really giving the other manufacturers a run for their money. I guess which brings me to, who's going to buy it?
That's a good question.
So who's going to buy it, Ollie?
Who's going to buy it? I think the person who's going to want to buy the Pan America is going to be someone who wants to stand out from the crowd. It's someone who wants a big adventure bike, who wants a big adventure touring bike, who wants to go away on those trips around the Alps or trips up to the NC500 in Scotland in complete comfort, possibly two up, but potentially looks at the big adventure bikes on the market at the moment and thinks none of them speak to my soul, or all of them are they're very visible
deep.
On the
it's
road
deep
yeah
your soul into it, but I quite agree,
you know, they
gotta connect, hasn't
someone
it,
but also someone who goes to, let's say, the car park of Rikers, the biker cafe down in South,
and you like posing at Rikers, don't
it's
you
my favorite
where you
place
are each weekend.
Well, for me, as a, you know, as a biker growing up in South London, it was a place I'd go every weekend to just immerse myself in the world of bikes and just have a peruse around. And there were always tons of GSs, there were multi-Stradas, there were the KTM 1290s. But if you think of all of the larger venture bikes out there at the moment, which bike are you going to take to Rikers if you want to draw the biggest crowd? And it's going to be the Pan America. So it's going to appeal to that person who wants to stand out from the crowd. Doesn't just want to stand out from the crowd. They want the crowd to be looking at them.
Yeah.
And I think it's that person who's going to be buying it. And yeah, they're going to be an early adopter, a bit of a trailblazer because it's the very first bike. But it's going to be that person with potentially a bit of a peacockish attitude towards their biking. They want to be seen. They want to be noticed. But they also want a good adventure bike that will hopefully take them around in comfort and style.
Yeah. I think the first group of people that are going to buy it are going to be short people.
Yeah.
I genuinely think height. That adaptive ride height. I remember being a queue for a ferry at Portsmouth, heading off on tour a few years ago. And there were four or five riders, all guys, probably 40s, 50s. Three of them had GSs.
Yeah.
Great adventure touring bike. Why would you not? And one of the guys had a Honda Cross Tourer. Oh. And basically, I had a chat with him, and I was basically saying, well, why are you the only one of your mates without a GS? You know, do you know something they don't? And he just said, no, the GS is too tall for me. I was able to get, I think it was the Cross Tourer, I was able to get a lower version or a lower seat or something like that, but I wanted shaft drive.
Yeah.
So we went for that Cross Tourer. Now, the Harley Davidson doesn't have shaft drive, and perhaps that's something actually we should have touched on earlier, in that a lot of people buy a GS because it has the hassle-free shaft drive element to it, doesn't it? You know, there's no lubing your chain, there's no tightening your chain, there's no changing chain and sprockets, whether you take it to a dealership or whether you do it yourself. So that's something that, you know, kind of may stop people from going to the Harley. But I think short people looking for a bigger venture bike, there's no way you're not going to at least take a look at it.
Absolutely. I think the special with that adaptive ride height, that's going to be, like you said, it's probably going to be first on the list because it's really manageable.
That's it. And I also think probably the second group of people it will be your general adventure bike buyer. You know, you've got to have a bit of cash to buy these big premium bikes. They're a lot of money. But it's going to be your floating voter. So I'm not quite sure yet if a bike like this is going to tempt your diehard GS fan, your diehard KTM rider, or your diehard Ducati rider or so forth.
Yeah.
But if, you know, if you're in the market for a new bike, if you're coming back to riding after some time out, or if you've just decided to upgrade and you're not connected deeply to a brand, I think on paper at least, this bike stands up to everything else out there.
Yeah. It
really does.
Yeah.
As long as you like the way it looks. And that's going to divide opinion. You know, I still can't make my mind up, to be honest with you.
I
think it looks cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's the best way to say it. I don't know whether... It's not beautiful in any way, but it looks pretty cool.
Yeah, it's just that it grabs your attention. You're not going to miss it. On the subject of who's going to buy it, actually, do you think Harley's existing customer base is going to buy it?
Yeah. It's interesting, isn't it? Because it's often talked about that people buy adventure bikes because... people have ridden sports bikes at a younger age, and I hear it quite a few from bikers I speak to out and about, is that they don't want to be hunched over a sports bike with backache and wrist ache, and actually you can get the performance that they get in an adventure bike these days, and it's a lot more comfortable with an upright seating position, and so forth. So an adventure bike is a natural progression. Harley riders are already pretty comfortable, especially your premium bike buyers, like your Ultra Limited and the big tourers that they do. You know, they're already pretty well catered for when it comes to comfort. So, are they gonna tempt people who have got one of those big comfortable tourers with the huge fairings onto an adventure bike? My answer is I just don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know, because I'm not one of those riders. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of difficult to put myself in that mindset.
Yeah, it's I think it's something that I've been thinking, because we're talking about brand loyalty and that definitely exists out there. But, you know, Harley, when you talk about Triumph and BMW and KTM bringing out an adventure bike, they have bikes in the mid-capacity sector. They have a history of it. But Harley don't have that heritage or history in the adventure bike sector. So they can't rely, or can they rely on those existing people to kind of spec up or trade in or go for the bike? And I think it's an interesting one. I don't know too many riders who ride those big tourers. So I honestly don't know. And it'd be really interesting if you're sat at home and you've either owned a big Harley tourer or you've owned a small Harley. Does the Pan America appeal to you as a Harley rider? And I think that's a question that I'd really personally like someone to answer in the comments, and a few people to answer in the comments, because I don't know. And I think that that's going to be a very important thing for Harley. If they can sway some of those more traditional Harley riders into buying the Pan America and then skim off those floating voters, those people that want to stand out from the crowd, and those shorter riders who love the idea of adaptive ride height, then it will be a success. But if they can't capture the hearts and minds of their existing customer base, does the Pan America have a real successful future down the pipeline? And it'll be interesting to see.
It's a question only time will tell.
Yep.
I think we're probably nearing the end of the discussion. Yeah. We could go on for hours, which is what we tend to do in the ABR office, in between putting magazines and various things together. But the one thing actually we didn't talk about, which again I think I touched on with the kind of utilitarian approach, is it looks like there's an awful lot of weather protection on that bike.
Oh yeah,
it's the huge screen and it's adjustable to four different positions.
Yeah, four different heights and one-handed, which
one-handed.
Really cool.
And I just wanted to give a shout out to this because this is a bugbear of mine. I'm going to repeat it from previous pods, but I don't understand why all big or medium-sized adventure bikes don't come with adjustable screens. I don't get it. I understand, I'll say it again, you know, if you're riding on the trails, you don't want a big screen in the way because it obscures your view of the trail. So why not just have a screen that goes up when you need some weather protection and a screen that goes down when you don't? And, you know, there's plenty out there that do.
Yeah.
So top marks to Harley for just thinking of something like that, but also thinking four positions. Because it may sound a little bit decadent, you know, do I need the wind on my forehead or on my cheek or my shoulder? But having spent, you know, kind of plenty of hours and hundreds of miles on European toll roads and UK motorways, being able to tweak where your screen is really can make a difference to comfort. And I don't want to sound like a princess or a snowflake, but, you know, when I rode the Honda Goldwing over in Spain, just being able to just notch down the electronic screen in just the right position was just a luxury that I came to really miss on any other bike I've been on. But there we go.
Top marks there.
Top marks. Actually, I think on paper, and stressing on paper, top marks for a lot of what Harley have done so far.
Yep.
And I think probably the biggest compliment I can give them is I cannot wait to ride the thing.
Yeah.
But I really don't want to be disappointed. I'm going at it from a viewpoint as I want to like it.
Yeah. And that's not surprising because ultimately we're advocates for adventure biking.
Yeah.
We don't have any skin in the game. We may have the bikes that we like, but we don't have any ridiculous brand loyalties. We just want
different bikes to have a brand loyalty. Yeah.
We just want lots of choice and we want good bikes out there and we want that variety and we want to see more people out on adventure bikes. So
if this is going to attempt people that may not have ridden an adventure bike before to get on them, then, you know, great. I can't wait.
Exactly.
So pray I won't be disappointed when I ride it. But only time will tell and the proof will be in the pudding and any other cliches that I can come out with.
Yeah.
But there you go. But yeah, we better get back and do some other things other than chatting about the Harley Pan America.
Yep.
Thanks very much for watching this episode of the ABR Garage. And as we said, please do leave any comments you have, particularly if you're a Harley rider or even if you're not, or you're tempted by the Pan American or you just think, no. Please leave some comments below this video. And remember, we'll have a full review in an upcoming issue of Adventure Bike Rider magazine. If you'd like to get your hands on a copy of ABR, all you need to do is go to www.adventurebikerider.com/shop and you can buy a copy there. We'll post it to you and it's free postage in the UK. Or If you'd like 10 years worth of adventure biking knowledge, inspiration, and entertainment at your fingertips on your phone, your tablet, or your computer, you can sign up to the Adventure Bike Rider Digital Library. So for us for now, thanks for watching, and we'll see you next time.